Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, and welcome back to the great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I am with my best friends in the world that I'm so glad to see because I haven't talked to in 2 weeks. First off, Justin, how the hell are you doing today?
I am fabulous, David. Thank you.
How are you doing, Randy?
I am okay.
Sorry for being a sick little bitch just last week and not being able to party, but I'll bring in the pain today, and we're going to start the pain with the greatest... Well, first of all, are you guys excited that Kylie Jenner's pregnant? That's exciting news, right?
Yes.
That's why we've reconvened.
With a baby, it says in the headline.
Wait, when did this happen?
Like 2 days ago. Come on, don't you keep up with the Kardashians?
I do. My 24-hour live stream into her bedroom did not show any baby-making activity. So ooh. I am shocked.
Shocked to the core. And now Kris Jenner is all concerned that she might not be able to continue modeling during this. It's like a no nightmare. All right, enough of that bullshit. On wow. The bigger and better things. Star Trek Discovery. Randy, you watched the first half of the pilot. I watched both halves of the pilot. Justin, yeah. The smart one of us, watched neither.
Sorry. So, I didn't know it was homework. Otherwise, no. I would have done.
Justin, you don't apologize. This is on par of like the three of us went to Mexico. I got the full shits. Randy got half the shits, and you didn't get anything. You have nothing to apologize for here, Justin.
Fair enough.
You have avoided the proverbial diarrhea in this situation.
Oh, that's always good.
So obviously, I loved it, Randy. What did you think of this piece of entertainment?
Oh, it was, the dialogue was so clunky, and I still don't know exactly what time period it's supposed to take place during. I love some of the cast, and I absolutely can't stand the performances of some of the other. And maybe it's not the performances, maybe it's the writing. I don't know, I don't want to point fingers, but it did not sit well with me.
Well, let me help you a little bit with that, Randy. Don't worry about any of the characters.
Are they all expendable?
They might all be expendable in the second half of that pilot.
Oh, man. I don't doubt it. I don't know.
I think they want to play the guessing game of, is it Prime or is it Kelvin? You know, they always said it was Prime, but the look is definitely JJ and Kelvin, and it feels like it is in the Kelvin universe, and I think they think that we care enough that it's going to be like a big bombshell when they finally give us that hint. I think they want to like lay breadcrumbs for however long this show lasts to where like we're constantly like, oh, is it this? Is it that? And like to try to like whip up some kind of fever because the show itself isn't very good. Sorry, I interrupted you like an asshole.
You know, I don't even know. I don't know where I was going.
You're talking about the characters nowhere. And the acting.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It felt forced. There's so many elements of this that felt forced. Like, I'm all for diversity in a movie and in a Star Trek crew and that kind of thing, but when they start calling it out in dialogue, I'm gonna paint a picture for you. We see this huge mass of Klingons, and they look like ancient Klingons wearing half, like, ancient Egyptian kind of outfits, like, including, like, sarcophagus, like, straight out of Stargate, right? And then part of it's, I guess, a little bit more traditional Klingon, but they're all, like, this deep black ebony skin, right? And then there's this one albino Klingon that comes up and wants to volunteer for this very important thing, and everybody's shitting on him because he's white, and the leader comes in and says, you know, some see the color of your skin as a detriment, but I see it as a mirror, and I'm looking back at myself. And between that and really kind of in other elements of the show, really kind of forcing the diversity agenda. It just it does feel forced. Like I said, I have absolutely nothing against that, but I think you should show it, not tell it. And when you have to call it out in dialogue and say, "Hey everybody, look how many women we have on the bridge," or "Hey everybody, not a single white male on the show so far," you know, that kind of thing. When they have to really point it out, it's like, all right, I get it.
Red is 100% right. Like, the SJW agenda is on full display here, and everything he said about the albino Klingon is, they, like, have exactly that dialogue that Randy just said about the whole thing with the mirror, and everyone looking down on him because of the color of his skin, and what do you think of the look of the Klingons, Randy?
I saw a leaked picture a couple months back, so I was prepared for them to not look like the Klingons I'm familiar with. It's a little bit kind of like the Star Trek motion picture Klingons, except none of these have hair. None of them have hair. They've got some ridges, but not, you know, what we're kind of used to seeing. So I really don't know what universe these fit in, you know? It's like, is it possible there could be a third universe that's not Kelvin or Prime? Or are these like ancient Klingons? Because it really seems like they have a lot more ancient tech than we've ever seen before. It's like maybe these guys have been left behind somewhere, lost out in the galaxy, and they're just kind of like coming back into the swing of things. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with these Klingons.
Yeah, and I would have to say, out of the two-parter, the Klingon story arc is probably the most interesting, just because I've always been a big fan of, you know, the Klingon Empire and, like, Kalis and all of that. And this is kind of like bringing the Klingon Empire we see in, like, the original series is, like, a very united, like, they're scary motherfuckers. And then, as opposed to the Klingons you see, you know, very briefly in the show Enterprise, they're a scattered, fractured mess. And so it's cool that this might be... Brian Fuller had mentioned that there was a big unifying event that isn't discussed in the original series or Enterprise that he wanted to focus on. And I think that it's the unification of the Klingon Empire against the Federation, which I think would be cool. The Klingon look in the second episode of the pilot, it starts to not look as good. Like, I was noticing a lot more that it looked like someone was wearing a really tight, like, rubber mask. And toward the first episode, it looked really good. I think it was more the lighting. Like, they were in, like, these dark tombs and stuff like that. Toward the second episode, they were, like, on, like, a bridge of a ship and stuff. And the makeup effects just didn't do it for me as much in the second half. But I had a real problem, like Randy said. I'm completely for diversity. I love The Force Awakens. You know, the three main people are someone of Latin descent, a black person, and a lady. And that is great. And I'm not one of these people that say SJW has ruined Star Wars, but the way this Star Trek Discovery is going, it's kind of a little heavy-handed, I think, in their messaging. And I know, Randy, you didn't see the second episode, so we're going to kind of be relatively spoiler-free, but this show was sold as Jason Isaacs as the captain of the Discovery, which brings us to the fact that we did not see the Discovery in the pilot. The first two episodes take place on Shinjan, or what was it? Do you remember the name of the ship, Randy?
I don't remember,
It was some Japanese word, because Michelle Yeoh from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon is the captain. And so we don't see the USS Discovery. We don't see Jason Isaacs' captain. So it was a real weird pick, but they did their homework. They ended on a cliffhanger for the free episode that aired on CBS, and they ended on another cliffhanger for the first episode, because I'm sure they assumed people were just going to pirate the first episode. So Justin, having heard these glowing reviews, and I'm sure have read online other people bitching about Star Trek Discovery, are you interested in, if this were to a Netflix or a free service, would you be jumping on the bit to check it out?
Yeah, I'd definitely check it out. I don't want to pay for another service. I have a million of them already. We always compare cable to Hydra. You cut off the head and then two more replace it, and that's exactly what happened with cutting the cable. So yeah. I do not need another service, But if it were to make its way somehow onto a free service that I could enjoy, sure, I'd check it out. I feel left out.
So it'll be 15 episodes, so that's roughly 4 months of programming, because they're going to do it weekly. So the whole show would run you $25, basically.
You mean you have to wait a whole week to watch each episode?
Yeah, yeah, it airs 8:30 on Sunday on CBS All Access. They're all not out.
Oh, my God. I feel so spoiled.
So in theory, you could wait till the end of the run, I guess, and then subscribe for like 1 month and just
get a week free. You get a week free, Dave.
So there you go. You got a week to watch the 15 hours of programming.
I can do that.
And,
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted.
Now, will it make it 15 episodes? Is it like a guaranteed deal? Or is it possible that this guy will get canned before that happens?
No, I believe they've completed their 15 episodes.
Okay, but they might not get a season 2.
Yeah, Alex Kurtzman seems pretty optimistic. But we all know his level of filmmaking, The Mummy, and his other writing endeavors. And then Akiva Goldsmith, who's probably just as bad as Alex Kurtzman, is also involved in this project. I can't remember if it was episode 1 or 2, Randy, where we found out a little more about the main character, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
It was the girl from The Walking Dead. Did you see like where she came from and stuff like that, or was that all?
Yeah, that's the first episode.
Yeah. Okay, so you see that Sarek and stuff.
Yeah, okay. She was raised by Vulcans.
Yeah, so that's our bridge into this show. You know, like every show has like someone from the previous incarnation coming over, and so she was raised by Sarek, who's Spock's father.
So they gotta tie in Spock somehow.
Uh huh. So she was raised by Vulcans, and so she has the emotions. She has like a sort of a detached emotional state like a Vulcan. She can communicate via like mind meld with Sarek. I think that was an episode 2. Sorry, Randy, for spoiling
that. Okay. That's all right.
And
she can do the neck pinch.
It's
I wish I was joking.
At one point she like mutinies.
Oh.
She takes over as the captain for like
Look
3
at me.
Seconds.
Look at me.
Exactly.
I am the captain.
Oh my God. And it's just a mess.
And what is Kurtzman's role in this?
He's the he's one of the executive producers.
Does he write any of the episodes or no?
Probably. I don't know. It has like 9 executive producers. Akiva Goldsmith is an executive producer. Alex Kurtzman is an executive producer. Brian Fuller is an executive producer. Greta Gerwig, or the very nice lady who we spoke to at Comic-Con, she's also one of the executive producers, as is Gene Roddenberry's son and his other partner, Trevor or something. So
I have a soft spot for Mr. Kurtzman, and I know you can't stand him. But he brought me Fringe, and that is like one of my all-time favorite shows. So he kind of gets a pass with me. Sorry.
No, it's totally fine. And so like him and Orsi, who they get lumped together because they were partners forever. I equate them to where people who watched wrestling in like the 90s, like we did, there's this guy named Vince Russo, and he came up with a lot of the best ideas that ever happened in wrestling. But he worked under Vince McMahon, who was like his filter. So he would have these ideas. Vince McMahon would filter out the shitty ones, and he would only bring the best ones, like DX or the Attitude Era, or most anything that happened in WWE at the time. He would push down the shitty ones. That's how I feel Kurtzman and Orsi are, is that when they work with someone like Lindelof or Abrams or Carlton Cuse, as they did in Fringe and Lost, and you know the Star Trek movies and stuff like that. When they have someone to filter out some of their nonsense, then I agree with you. I don't dislike what they do. It's when they're kind of given like a free rein and a free hand, like you get with The Mummy, or you got with like the Amazing Spider-Man movies, or you got with some of the later Transformers and stuff like that. When you get stuff like that, that's when I start to be like, ugh, these fucking guys.
You know he wrote Cowboys and Aliens?
Mm-hmm.
That's Cowboys and Aliens coming together.
Hey, that had Han Solo and James Bond in the same movie.
I know. You believe that?
I cannot believe the movie's not better because it is directed by Jon Favreau, executive produced by Spielberg and Ron Howard.
And Clancy Brown's in it, and he's a badass. I think he dies, though.
It's got such star power. I just don't understand how it was so bad.
Because it's cowboys and aliens.
Oh, they should have picked.
You gotta pick. You can't mix the two. It doesn't work. Sci-fi westerns just don't. They don't work. They're great on paper, and they're great in some sort of fake made-up world that fans have. But when you see it, it's bad.
Well, the funny thing is that Star Trek Discovery is not even the best Star Trek show on television right now. Isn't that right, Randy?
Absolutely. We're talking about The Orville. If you guys haven't seen that new show, you really owe it to yourself. Whether you like Seth MacFarlane or not, or his comedy stylings, he really is kind of toned down compared to a lot of other things you've probably seen him in this, and it really does feel like, it feels like the Star Trek series that we need right now. It feels like a continuation of The Next Generation. It's happy, it's bright, it's got a lot of optimism about it. It's not this dark, gritty, shitty universe like we were introduced to in Star Trek Discovery. It's just fun, you know, and it kind of drops all military pretense. People will speak to each other on the bridge very conversationally. So, I mean, it's not going to get mistaken as an actual Star Trek show at any point in time, but it is just a whole lot of fun, and it's got a surprising amount of heart in it as well, which I was not expecting, but I certainly enjoyed. And yeah, it felt so much like Next Generation to me, and that's probably my favorite Star Trek series. So, you owe it to yourself. Check it out.
Yeah, I think, and it's a lot of fun, and you can tell that there's a lot of reverence, you know, towards the source material. Obviously, Seth MacFarlane's a big TV guy, and specifically a Star Trek guy. It's not Galaxy Quest like I think we all were hoping. But it's not Star Trek Discovery either. But, Justin, you haven't seen this show either, have you?
I have not.
Do you own a television?
I do. Oh. It mostly plays video games.
That's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. But, well, you did see something recently though, right?
I did. I saw The Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
Oh, everyone hated that, so you must have hated it too, right?
I didn't. I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. Ooh. It's long. The movie was at 1:40. I got home at 4:40.
Oh, wow.
So yes. It was intense. And you know what's funny is I always forget that this is a movie, but Geostorm was a trailer
before. Oh, my God. Best movie ever.
I always forget that that's a thing, because before you just saw the plane falling out of the sky and the ocean freezing. But now you get, like, Gerard Butler and fucking, what's his name?
Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia, yeah.
As the president.
As the president! And I have no idea where this movie's going, and it's so funny. And it cracks me up. Anyway, that's what got me in the amazing mood before Kingsman. So I think that helped set it up. it's like an opening act for a comedy show or something.
it can't be worse than Geostorm.
so bad. So no, I can't wait to see that movie. But yes, Kingsman. It's fantastic. And there's a couple of things that caught me by surprise. And one of which was just how, I don't know if it's just like an exaggeration of what maybe British people think Americans are, because if that's the case, we're all sort of cowboy hillbilly types with Burt Reynolds mustaches. and it makes sense. Like, it plays out like very well, because in the grand scheme of things, when you're watching the Kingsman, they're talking about being a gentleman and being proper and manners. And that's sort of the perception that we thought British people had. So it makes sense for them to do the opposite with Americans and just sort of have them all be sort of cowboy hillbilly types. And you got your Jeff Bridges and fucking Oberyn Martell. He looks just like Burt Reynolds in this movie. It's so awesome. But loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. It was a lot of fun. A lot of death. Julianne Moore was pretty good. Elton John was pretty funny, too. That was a surprise for me. I had no idea he was in it. But I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it. Matthew Vaughn, yeah. This is a guy that we were hoping, well, at least I was hoping, would step in to do maybe like a Star Wars movie or a superhero movie again. And he's sort of kind of in talks, to, or at least rumored to be interested in a Superman sequel. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, Man of Steel 2. Did you see? He's got an interesting take on it, too. But I don't know if it would work as a sequel within the current universe. Mm-hmm. But if they reboot with Flashpoint, because he was all about, you know, bringing back the big blue Boy Scout, you know, the true justice American way type thing. And the way he does action, can you imagine him doing action with someone who has Superman's powers?
No.
It'd just be nuts.
It's too much to handle. Yeah, it's like a Fast and Furious kind of
level. Is there like a church scene equivalent in Kingsman? Did he try to top the masterpiece that is the church scene, or was he smart enough to kind of be like, well, we probably can't top that?
I don't think there was a scene like that, no. I do believe that all of your fan favorites all had a moment to shine in the movie, though. They all sort of got their 15 minutes, as it were, to be amazing.
Oh, well, good. Are we looking at number three here? Or do you think two is going to be where Matthew Vaughn gets off this train?
I would be okay with just two movies in this tale. I mean, even if the three was announced or whatever, I think it's time for Matthew Vaughn to move on. He's a guy that doesn't really do sequels anyway, so it's kind of cool that he did Kingsman 2, at least from a directorial standpoint.
Yeah. And they shot a 3.5-hour movie. And they had to pare it down to the 2 hours and 12 minutes or whatever it ended up being.
Dude,
but
it's long. It never felt long. It's just when I got home, I was like, holy shit, it's fucking almost 5 o'clock. Like, I had no idea.
Where'd the day go?
Yeah, and I live right by my movie theater. But it's they don't help with the 20 minutes of trailers prior to the movie either. But
yeah, last time I was in the movie theater, it was... I got like 7 trailers. Like, it was excessive. Yeah. And I love trailers.
And they're like 3 minutes long, so it takes it out of you. Yeah, if you're a snack eating person, then you have to sort of pace yourself, because you'll be done with your popcorn before the movie even starts.
Yeah, it happened to me. I was like, shit, all this popcorn, and the movie started, and I got none.
Yeah.
So then they do free refills, but then you're like, do I want to have 2 bubs of popcorn?
Yeah, but then you got to get up right when the movie's starting.
That's okay. Someone always has to go to the bathroom in my group.
Oh, okay.
When you come back, get more popcorn.
But I will say that I enjoyed the first one more, but I thought this one had all the elements to a successful sequel. You know, sort of the bigger is better, larger cast, crazy violence, more explosions, sort of interesting little twists and turns, and I dug it.
Oh, nice. Well, good. I'm glad it was a good sequel. But that segues perfectly into arguably the master of sequels, you know, Mr. James Cameron. He's got two pretty amazing sequels under his belt in Aliens and Terminator 2, who most people consider to be better than their predecessors, and that's high praise. He was out there on his, I don't want to sound like a dick anymore, tour, because I said bad shit about Wonder Woman, / press tour for T2 Judgment Day 3D, and he made a pretty big announcement that he was going to be pretty hands-on and with the next Terminator movie, Terminator 6/2.5, and that Linda Hamilton was going to be returning to the franchise, and my mind has gone blank. I've already forgotten who's directing this film, and I feel terrible, and I'm hoping while I'm stalling that it comes to one of you. Do you guys remember who's...
They have a director? I didn't even know they had a director.
They do. Tim Miller, the director of Deadpool, that's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
So Tim Miller is going to be directing it, and so him and James Cameron made the announcement together that Linda Hamilton was going to be returning to Transformers, to Terminator. So, Randy, what's up with this? This is cool. This is good news, right?
I think it's good news. I would love to see a direct sequel to Terminator 2. And having James Cameron involved is never a bad thing, considering some would say that, you know, he's the lifeblood of that franchise. So, yeah, I don't really see any fault in it. What's Linda Hamilton been up to in the last 20 years, though?
I have no
Living off alimony from James Cameron. Oh. Arnold is also returning, you know, because you can't have a Terminator without Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Last thing that... So she was in Defiance, the TV show, which I never watched. It's sort of like a game and a TV show at the same time. Like the video game. The video game, and it was a sci-fi series. She was in Chuck, if that helps you.
Oh, yeah, she's Chuck's mom. But, I mean, that was 10
a while
ago.
Yeah, 2012, I think, is the last time that she was on that.
She was trying to get the Intersect out of Chuck.
There you go.
For you Chuck fans.
But, yeah. She
better, what about you, Justin? Are you excited for the prospect of this?
Yeah, I love Terminator. I see them all in the theaters.
Are you sad that they're going to kind of shit can the continuity that after I'm a T3 apologist. I enjoy the movie. It could have just been that I got to see it with my buddy Justin in the movie theater, but I enjoy the futility of Terminator 3. It's like the first two are all about stopping Judgment Day, and T3 is there is no stopping it.
Yeah,
like it's
this
like,
is happening.
Nothing we do will stop Judgment Day, and so it's just how do we rebuild. And so I loved 3, but...
I did too. I like the part when he had the casket full of guns and he was just like holding it up and just mowing down police officers and stuff. I thought that was cool.
Didn't Schwarzenegger almost lose a finger in that scene? Because the way he was holding that casket full of guns, there were all these little explosives and squibs and stuff set off on it. And he had his hand covering one of them and it blew up right underneath his hand.
Oh, man.
Did you hear that story?
No, I never heard that. I believe it. There was a lot of bullets flying in that scene.
Yeah.
And that same doctor from T2 who's like Sir Connor's like therapist.
Dr. Silverman, yeah.
Dr. Silverman, yeah, he shows up in that scene.
Poor guy.
he just runs away when he sees But I like Terminator 3, but
and the ending was a big surprise, just seeing all the rockets in the air. I was like, oh shit. That's no good.
Yeah.
Duck and cover.
So you bumped because you liked Genesis whatever.
I like all things Terminator. It's like a guilty pleasure. I'm just fascinated with the franchise, and I can't get enough of it. I apologize for my poor taste in movies, but I'm not necessarily disappointed that those other movies are getting just sort of tossed aside because they're special to me. I will always have them, and Terminator 2 is one of the greatest movies ever made, so... To follow up after that, I think he's got his hands full, but I'm looking forward to it. I can't have enough Terminator, and as long as Arnold is still alive and making them, then I'll keep going.
Remind me, because my memory of Genesis is weak. John Connor's the bad guy in that, right?
Yeah, he gets taken over by the doctor, by Matt Smith.
But they don't ever cure him, right? It ends with him, like, dying?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. I'd be down with a Terminator movie that didn't focus on the Connors. Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, so that's fine, but this one's obviously going to if Linda Hamilton's in it.
Right. What about Edward Furlong?
Yeah, I don't know what he's up to. He got shot in a bathroom once.
He did. He got better.
Oh, did he? When was
that's
that?
So sad.
When he was died. That? Oh, I know. It was terrible. That movie was rough. Did you ever have the privilege of seeing the 3D experience at Universal Studios?
Of T2 3D?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That was cool.
My favorite part's when Arnold kills the Terminator and looks at him all sad. And he's like, what's wrong? Cottage roommates. Oh my God. That's my Terminator right there.
I was always a fan of their live shows. There was a Conan one once I thought was pretty badass.
Yeah.
Miami Vice.
That was a good one. The Waterworld.
Waterworld was good. The plane lands. That's pretty badass.
I remember pretty surprised first time that plane flew over and landed in the water. I'm like, oh shit, there's a plane in this thing? I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Maybe we need a new Terminator experience.
Yeah, he took it out for the Minions ride.
I haven't done that.
It's not as good as the Terminator ride. It's fun, but...
But I like the live shows with the peoples. I remember Magic Mountain did... Six Flags did a Batman Forever. Yeah. That's pretty terrible.
It was not good.
It was bad.
I saw it. And then they made one for Batman and Robin. And then they made just a Batman one. And then I went to a Magic Mountain, like a different Magic Mountain, and they had like a Batman water show.
Oh, is he wearing swim trunks like when he surfs with Joker?
Nope, he was full costume.
Yeah.
Never go full costume in the water.
That's too bad.
In the water.
Yes.
It is. Where would you put it on your favorite movies of 2017 right now, Justin?
I don't know. It's pretty high up there. Although, I would say that 2017 has been kind of a weird year for movies, so I couldn't even tell you what I saw and enjoyed. I know John Wick 2 and Wonder Woman's and It are on that list, though. I can't think of anything else that came out in 2017.
You got the Beauty and the Beast, the Wonder Woman, the Guardians, Spider-Man, Homecoming.
Oh, Logan, Guardians, yeah. There were some good ones. And I didn't see Planet of the Apes because I was informed of the ending and I was not happy.
It's beautifully done, Justin. Mm. The
It ranks.
More of the first Oscar screeners started to go out, and the first movie that went out with the Oscar screeners was Logan, so that's kind of promising.
That's good. I liked Kong, too. I was pleasantly surprised with Kong. And then same with Atomic Blonde, but like Randy, I'm a sucker for the 80s, so I was their target audience.
Did you see Get Out?
I didn't. It was spoiled for me.
Oh, okay, yeah. What about Split? Do you see Split? Or same thing, that was spoiled too.
That was spoiled too, but I didn't really care.
Yeah.
So, but it's definitely up there. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I was scared. Spider-Man. I fell asleep during Spider-Man though.
That's right, you did.
To watch that again.
you gotta check it out. I thought The Return of Xander Cage was going to be your favorite movie of the year.
Oh, yeah.
XXX, The Return of Xander Cage. That came out this year.
I know. And that's been a while since the XXX movie. It's like, what, 15 years or so?
Yeah. I don't know.
I think it's on my list for coming up in a little bit. Yeah, 15 oh, yeah? years. Yeah, 15 years. How about that? Yeah. But yeah, It. What is it now? It's the highest grossing horror film of all time.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
All time. It's got $266 million domestically.
Yeah, I think it's like $3-something worldwide.
$478 worldwide.
Oh, there you go. Even better.
Yeah, it is. It is the number one horror R-rated movie of all time.
So, that's good and that's bad. It's good that it is... doing a very good job, and everyone's happy about it, and it's making everyone excited, but that's just going to add more fuel to the remake machine, and everyone's going to want to remake shit again. So, if it's horror, I don't care, but if it's comedy or action, then I got a problem with it.
Yeah, I think we might see an influx of Stephen King properties, which is hard to imagine since there's like 8 in development already.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that being the It effect of people not being afraid to really R-rate up. Because, you know, Stephen King's writings are, they translate pretty well to R, to where maybe they look at what happened with Dark Tower, where they tried to go PG-13 and kind of like really massage the property into something incoherent, to where with It, they kind of ran with, you know, what Stephen King's original thought was and made it R-rated and didn't shy away from the violence and the gore, and they were rewarded for it. So maybe we get more hard R-rated Stephen King adaptations.
Yeah.
So Justin can watch them and tell me about them.
Yeah.
Because I'm a scared boy. Because you didn't see it, did you, Randy?
I did not. Not yet, no.
Are you going to see it? Are you a pussy, too?
Well, I am a P-word, but I still intend to see it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. Can't do it. But in honor of Sarah Connor returning to Terminator, Justin, you have a fun list for us, don't you?
Oh, I do. I do. I do. I do. Hold, please.
Hold, please. Talk amongst ourselves.
It is a fun list that IGN did. I came across it earlier in the day, and it is actors who revived iconic roles. So I think this is exciting and worth mentioning. And the first one to pop up on the list is none other than Harrison Ford. A couple movies, actually, or franchises, I guess I should say. We have Blade Runner, which is a 35-year gap in which he has returned to his role. What is his name? Rick Deckard? Is that what it is?
Deckard, yeah. Yep.
I always want to say Deckard Cain for some reason. Who is Deckard Cain? Somebody Google that.
He's a killer. He's the you know how this shit works guy, but that's not his name in the movie. But that's who. Hang on, Deckard Cain.
Oh, he's from Diablo. He's the one that's like Bob Barry. That would explain why I'm always saying his name, because fucking I have hours and hours and hours sunk into that game. It's ridiculous. Thousands of hours into that game. Deckard Cain is an old man, much like Harrison Ford. But, yes, 35 years with Rick Deckard. How about that? Then also, obviously, Harrison Ford with Han Solo, 32 years span between roles. And then Indiana Jones, it's not on this list per se, but what was it between Last Crusade and...
19 years.
There you go. And Kingdom of Crystal Skull?
Yeah, 89 to 2008.
Wow, that's nuts. Then we have Linda Hamilton, 28 years between her roles with Sarah Connor with Terminator 2 and the untitled upcoming one that's going to be, what, 2019? Is that when the new one comes out?
Yep.
2019. Then we got Jeff Bridges, my man. Tron.
My man.
28 years with Tron. God damn it, I love that movie.
So good.
Kevin Flynn. God, remember when we went and saw it remastered in the theater? Randy, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I loved every second of it.
Yeah. That was the tits, as they say. Michael Douglas in Wall Street. 23 years separating Mr. Gordon Gekko. And I actually did not like the sequel. I was not a fan.
Oh, Money Never Sleeps or whatever?
Oh, it was so bad.
I love the original, but the sequel was just weird.
Yeah, it was not good. Not a fan. Jeff Goldblum for Independence Day. 20 years separate.
I'm seeing a theme here. It should have been titled 20 People Who Revived Their Characters But Shouldn't Have.
That's not nice. And then he's
for just the last couple of days.
And he's going to be in Fallen Kingdom for Jurassic Park?
Yes.
Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom? Mm-hmm. Interesting. Why would he go back? Someone that's so anti-dinosaurs. What's it going to take to get
money,
back?
I tell you, money.
I guess so. But, I mean, it's also worth mentioning that there were a lot of returning characters in Independence Day. You had Bill Pullman, fucking Brett Spiner, Vivica A. Fox for like 8 seconds. And then Judd Hirsch. Judd Hirsch too. He was everywhere in that movie.
Yeah, if you're in an Independence Day movie, the safest place in the world is next to Judd Hirsch, I think.
Yeah. Like,
he's always in the middle of the shit, and he's always him and whoever his group, whether it's kids on the bus or it's the kids he was praying with or him just going with David, wherever he goes, they're all fine. So hang out with Judd Hirsch.
He looks the same. 20 years separate these two movies, and he looks like not a day has aged. He's got like he's got one of those rings like Bilbo Baggins.
He's got the one ring. That's how they beat the ships, you know?
No kidding. Then you got Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels for Dumb and Dumber.
Continuing the trend of not coming back. No, they were in Dumb and Dumber 2. Dumb and Dumber was the prequel.
That's right. And that has our buddy from Fired Up.
That's right. How Harry Met Lloyd. Which I will say is a better Dumb and Dumber than Dumb and Dumber 2.
Okay. And it's T-O instead of T-W-O.
Yeah, or the Teen Wolf, T-O-O.
Oh, yeah. Teen Wolf 2. That movie's got a lot of montages. 80s was big on that.
They were.
Moving on. And it's the whole song, too, mind you. It's like, we need 4 minutes. 4 minutes of a montage.
4 minutes of this Simple Head song.
Yeah, and it'll even fade out. It's great. In the 80s, songs didn't end. They just faded out. Sad. Coming in hot. Oh, here's Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. You are correct, Randy. 19 years. Not that I did not believe you. It's just funny.
I was going to say, was there ever any need of doubt?
Not a bit. Then we have Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. And then 17 years later, of course, we had H2O.
And she's coming back.
Is she really?
Yeah. John Carpenter's doing a new Halloween. And Jamie Lee Curtis is going to be in it. And it's going to shit can like a million of the movies.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, they released a picture. And Jamie Lee Curtis in front of the house. And she actually looks pretty good.
Nice. I liked in the 80s when they would do a sequel that took place seconds after the first one ended. And Halloween 2 was very much one of those. And the first one, spoiler alert, Mike Myers gets shot out the window and he lands on the grass in the front yard. But then when they go out there, surprise, he's gone. And then, what is her name? Is her name like Laurie Strode? I forget what her name is. Doesn't matter.
I know her first name is Laurie. That's all I know.
She goes to the hospital and then he terrorizes her in the hospital. Oh.
But I agree with you. I love that in the 80s. Like, Karate Kid did that, too.
Yeah, he's in the shower in part two.
Yeah, and then he goes outside, and it's Kreese Pistajani for losing to Russo.
Yeah. It's like, a real piece of shit, you know that?
Yeah, I like shit. I love the shit like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Then we have Sylvester Stallone in Rocky. Of course, 1990 was Rocky V, and then in... We had a 16-year gap between that and Rocky Balboa.
My ring's outside.
That's Rocky V.
I know.
And then 9 years separates Rocky Balboa and Creed, which Creed is arguably one of the best Rocky movies ever made.
Totally.
It's pretty good, yeah. Better than five, that's for sure.
Yes. I really like the music in two. I know you don't really care for two, Dave, but... The music in that one's pretty good.
I don't dislike two. It feels the longest.
Right.
Because you got the whole thing of like, you know, he's got to like build up. Like the second that Adrian wakes up and Mickey says, "What are we waiting for?" As soon as that hits, like it's on and the movie is amazing. But it just until that part when like Rocky's fighting with Adrian and she's in the hospital and I'm like, oh.
And he's trying to get a job.
I don't like it.
Can't read.
Yeah, I don't like it when he's doing the trying to be the like spokesperson. He can't read, and people are like, "Rock, you an idiot!" And I'm like, "Oh, poor guy."
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
What are we waiting for?
Burgess Meredith, fighting man. He died. I remember I was at a Radio Shack when I found out he died.
Speaking of montages, Rocky IV has a montage that ends and goes into another montage.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So that's pretty good. That takes skill.
I think Over the Top does that too.
Over the Top does it through back to back to back. There's the montage. There's the sad montage of him losing Mikey, then the montage of him signing up and starting the wrestling, and there's a montage of Mikey finding like the letters that he sent to his mom and then stealing the car and going to the event.
That's right.
Three in a row.
That's pretty good.
Different songs.
You can't go wrong with that. People like music.
I like it. I like Over the Top.
I do too. It's so good. That's another guilty pleasure. Over the Top and Terminator.
I even like the remake, Real Steel, with Hugh Jackman. Oh, it's basically over the top with robots.
That's true.
But I love that.
The Rock'em Sock'em robots.
Yeah. Anytime that movie's on, I'll watch it no matter what part it's in.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's your buddy Sean Levy. He did Stranger Things and Night at the Museum.
Is Anthony Mackie in that movie, too?
He is. He's like a bookie.
Yeah, I like that movie.
But a good bookie.
Right. He's like me. He's got scruples.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson for Zoolander. Time away from these roles was 15 years.
Wow. It should have been in...
Yeah.
It's not good.
It's too bad. Vin Diesel, your buddy, Dave. You're just talking about him with...
Triple X.
Yeah. 15 years between roles of Xander Cage. There was another one that had Ice Cube in it, though, right?
Ice Cube, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see that one.
It was not good.
That's Sharon Stone for Basic Instinct. I totally forgot that there was a second one. 14 years between Basic Instinct and we'll call it Basic Instinct 2, because I don't even know what it's called.
Basicer Instinct.
Even more in tune with Instinct.
Super Basic Instinct.
Then you got the Arnold Schwarzenegger there. He just can't stay away from Terminator. 12 years is the longest gap, and that would be between parts 2 and 3. While his likeness does make an appearance in Salvation, he never spent a single day on set.
Yeah, I think Salvation could have done without that little cameo.
Yeah. And then
I liked it.
Then you had the 12 years with... between Terminator 3 and Genesis. Seems like it's longer than that, but what can you do? I like the cameo, too. It caught me by surprise. I remember an interview where his kids were like, "Dad, this is the best Terminator movie yet." He's like, "Oh, man."
It's like, son of a bitch.
Sean Connery coming back as James Bond. We all know him as, we thought his last role was going to be Diamonds Are Forever in 1971, but wouldn't you know it, he just had to come back with the Thunderball remake, Never Say Never Again. And it's odd to pick that movie to remake because that's arguably one of the best James Bond movies, Thunderball.
Yeah, I have to imagine if this movie came out in the era of the internet, it would have been perceived as just a cash grab.
Yeah. What was that really cool documentary on James Bond that you made me watch? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm just trying to think. Trying to think of the Everything or Nothing.
That sounds like that's what it should be called. That was actually really good. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, Everything or Nothing, 2012.
That was a good one. It was on the Netflix. And then last, I think this is the last one, we have Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley for Pirates.
And they are seriously in the fifth Pirates of the movie. Like, Keira Knightley says zero words and is in it for maybe 15 seconds. Orlando Bloom has some small part to play, but he doesn't, you know... I would say Orlando Bloom is a glorified cameo. Keira Knightley is an extra who just has a face that we know.
Really?
Yeah.
She doesn't say anything?
Doesn't say a word.
Huh.
Actually, the fifth one's not that bad. Like, I know I just said some bad stuff about it, but, you know, it's kind of an entertaining story, and it really opened up, like, a future that would be an interesting way to go in the Pirates franchise, but I don't think it'll happen because this one made no money. Are you guys ever going to see it, or is this a Stranger Tides thing where you're just never going to watch it?
I am having a real problem with Johnny Depp.
Oh, okay. Are you going to watch it, Randy? I don't want to spoil it if you get going to watch it.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me if he beats women.
Okay, you're gonna watch.
I'm kidding. I just said that to get Justin's goat. I will watch it just because I do like the Pirates movies. Oh. But I have a terrible short-term memory, so feel free to talk about it. I will not remember.
That explains all the tattoos all over your body.
Yeah,
it does. So the whole point of the movie is Will and Elizabeth's son is trying to find the Trident of Poseidon, because whoever owns the Trident of Poseidon is the master of the sea, and he can do whatever he wants. And so he wants to get it so he can reverse all seaborne curses, because his father is the captain of the Flying Dutchman, can only come to land once every 10 years, so he's trying to reunite his family. So, spoiler alert, he succeeds. And so in the very end, Orlando Bloom is able to return to shore, and he goes to Elizabeth, and the two of them embrace, and they hug their kid, and they're like, oh, we're all a happy family. And so in the mid-credit scene, it's Orlando Bloom is sitting or laying in bed with Keira Knightley, all is happy and all is good, and you hear this like peg leg like thump and thump and thump, and you never see him, but you see these barnacles that he's left behind, and so it's Davy Jones, because the curse has been lifted from him as well. And so it was going to set up this real interesting thing of all of these people that were in the first trilogy of films now are no longer bound to the curses or deaths or things that have happened to them on the sea. And so it seemed really interesting, and I was really excited about that aspect of it, but I don't think it'll come to pass now.
I don't understand, though. If something is dead, then shouldn't it be dead? And it's kind of weird that they can just come back to life.
I don't know. I don't know the voodoo magic that's involved in that.
I mean, his heart was removed from his body, and then it was stabbed.
he's a squid face guy.
That's like a twofer.
Different rules. Squid faces.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Was that your list?
That was the list. This concludes
everybody?
Our list. Yes.
Ooh,
I can't think of anybody else.
List. I thought so. Most of them were probably shouldn't have come back for those roles, but there are a couple good ones on there.
Sure.
I obviously think the best Han Solo we ever got was Force Awakens Han Solo. I loved him to death. I'm excited for Linda Hamilton to come back. Jeff Bridges was pretty good in Tron. But then you get, Michael Douglas, Jeff Goldblum, Jim Carrey, Harrison Ford.
To be fair, Jeff Goldblum was fun in Independence Day. Yeah, I mean, it might have been a terrible movie, but part of me went to go see, him and Bill Pullman in the movie again. They were they are what brought me back to the movie, not necessarily the movie itself. It was these characters, and that's what it's all about, reviving characters.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I think that their dichotomy is probably the most interesting thing that happened. There are obviously our window into the past and the future, but there are two coins of it. Bill Pullman was, he saw the shit, and he is damaged goods from it.
Right.
And we see the aftermath of, what having an alien in your head did to him. And then on the other side of the coin, we have Jeff Goldblum, who now is like super duper hero because he's made all of this amazing tech out of it. And so he's prospering from the original attack to where Bill Pullman is still suffering the ill effects. So I found that interesting, but the movie as a whole is just...
I find you interesting.
But didn't have Judd Hirsch in it, which... Never get too much Judd Hirsch.
You can't. I would watch Taxi right now if it were on TV.
It's a fun show.
Fucking Nick at Night used to be shows like Dick Van Dyke and Taxi and The Jeffersons and I Love Lucy. And now it's like Fresh Prince.
It's King of Queens and Everyone Loves Raymond now.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's what's always on that I watch.
Oh my God, that breaks my heart.
If I just need something brainless to put on, I put on TV Land, and it's got everyone like 2 hours of Everyone Loves Raymond, 2 hours of King of Queens, and I'm a happy camper. I ended up watching like 3 hours of MASH the other day. I got riveted. And I was never like someone who watched MASH, but they had it on, and Alan Alda's got such a soothing voice to listen to. And
they had a laugh track.
Yeah, they did.
War is funny.
It was simultaneously one of the best and one of the worst shows ever, because they would go from these silly, fun, lighthearted episodes to this real fucking downer about death and dying children or something like that. It would just swing from one extreme to the other, and you never knew what you were going to get with that show.
Big time.
Yeah. I think it was the later seasons is when they added the laugh track, and it kind of got schizophrenic when they were trying to figure out their things. But yeah, all the episodes I watched were very... serious, but with like a softer edge. But yeah, I enjoyed it. But yeah, you guys got anything else? Got anything else, Justin? That was a great list.
That was a great list. Yeah, sort of on a sad note, my father's best friend, Brad Kammerer, passed away over the weekend from cancer. And he was his best friend for over 50 years, and he was a big part of our family. And it was really upsetting to all of us, and I miss him already, and I just want to dedicate this episode to him.
Well, I'm sorry, sorry for your loss.
Why, thank you.
That's a damn fine gesture, though.
The best episode ever gets dedicated to him.
I wish we'd done it at the beginning. I would have tried harder. Shit.
Right?
We gotta do this over, guys. We gotta do this again. I'll bring my A game. What about you, Randy? Anything else?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. As always, go to geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. And whilst there, you can listen to the Pixelated Podcast, which is this guy over here, Justin, and guy not here, Stephen K. James, talking about video games. And they don't want you to be a dick to each other. Gotta be nice.
Yeah.
Treat the gamers with respect. Don't be an asshole. There's enough of them out there. Be part of the solution, not the problem. But like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, @GeekLegacy, and we will talk to you another time.